As we started to listen to the sermonette on the morning of the first holy day, my heart sank a little as Mr. Munro started talking about the very topic I'd been preparing for this message. It then got worse as he turned to one of my main scriptures in Exodus. But then, just as I was sure I would need to prepare something different for today, he quoted the well-known saying that repetition is the best form of emphasis. To add to that, in the sermon we heard this morning, Mr. Armstrong mentioned exactly the same thing. So although we will be reading some of the same words as we read just under a week ago, as with most scriptures, there are many lessons that can be gleaned from the passages. What I would like to look at today are two very important lessons from the miraculous water crossings that the Israelites experienced en route to the Promised Land. The first, of course, was the Red Sea. But before we read that, about that in Exodus 14, let's just take a moment to set the scene. At first, the arrival of Moses and Aaron on the scene brought the Israelites nothing but grief, with Pharaoh increasing their workload in response to the initial demand to let my people go. Following that, they experienced the first three plagues firsthand, and then witnessed the separation of the land of Goshen as it was protected from the rest. Then they had been finally told to go, which they did with a very high hand, taking the spoil of the Egyptians with them. And then we arrive at the place just before they got to the Red Sea. So let's turn to Exodus 14. Some important things to note as we read through these scriptures. Before each of the events, God told Moses quite specifically what he had planned, very much a case of revealing first to his servants, as per Amos 3 verse 7. So in Exodus 14, starting in verse 1, "And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Piharoth, between Migdol and the sea, over against Baal-zephon, before it shall ye encamp by the sea. For Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, They are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart, and he shall follow after them. And I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, and the Egyptians, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Eternal." And they did so. God told Moses exactly where he wanted the Israelites to be, and for a very specific purpose. Although the lessons were there right in front of the Israelites, if they would only watch and learn, the lesson God had planned here was aimed straight at the Egyptians. As verse 4 says, "I will be honored upon Pharaoh and upon all his hosts, that the Egyptians may know that I am the Eternal." Then Pharaoh does exactly what God said he would. He prepared himself and pulled together the largest army he could. In verse 7, "And he took 600 chosen chariots and all the chariots of Egypt, and captains over every one of them. And the Eternal hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued after the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with a high hand. But the Egyptians pursued after them, all the horses and the chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his armies, and overtook them in camping by the sea, besides Piharoth, before Baal-zephon. And when Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them. And they were sore afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Eternal. And they said unto Moses, Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness? Wherefore hast thou dealt thus with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Is not this the word that we did tell thee in Egypt, saying, Let us alone, that we may serve the Egyptians? For it had been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness. And Moses said unto the people, Fear ye not, stand still, and see the salvation of the Eternal, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. The Eternal shall fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. And the Eternal says unto Moses, Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel, that they go forward. Now, at face value, this appears a bit contradictory. Moses tells the people to stand still, and yet God tells them to go forward. Moses trusted God, and that came out in how he dealt with the Israelites, who were sore afraid. They were scared stiff, like a rabbit caught in the headlights of a car, paralyzed with fear. Moses had been told by God to take the Israelites to a set place and to set up camp there, and that the Egyptians would be stirred up and would pursue them. He also knew that the Egyptians were in for a beating at the hand of God, but there was no indication that he knew exactly how this would be done at this stage. He just trusted God, that God had it all planned and that God would tell him what to do when necessary. And that is exactly what happened. In verse 15, the phrase, that they go forward, is a single word. It's Strong's number 5265, which means to pull up, especially the tent pegs. That is, to start on a journey. In essence, now isn't the time for standing there like startled bunnies. Pack up the camp and let's get this show on the road. Then God told Moses exactly how it would be done in verse 16. But lift thou up thy rod and stretch out thine hand over the sea and divide it, and the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. And I, behold, I will hearten the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow you, and I will get me honour upon Pharaoh and upon all his host, upon his chariots and upon his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Eternal, when I have gotten me honour upon Pharaoh, upon his chariots, and upon his horsemen. Again, God telling Moses in advance exactly what he was about to do, and why. And again, the focus was on teaching the Egyptians. Verse 21, And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Eternal caused the sea to go back, by a strong east wind all that night, and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. And the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on the right hand and unto their left. And then, just like God had said, the Egyptians charged on behind them. Verse 23, And the Egyptians pursued, and went in after them to the midst of the sea, even all of Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. And it came to pass that in the morning watch the Eternal looked into the host of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and of the cloud, and troubled the host of the Egyptians, and took off their chariot wheels, that they drave them heavily, so that the Egyptians said, Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Eternal fighteth for them against the Egyptians. The Egyptians were given their final lesson and had to acknowledge that it was God they were fighting and not the Israelites. And once they had done that, God commanded Moses to stretch out his hands over the sea again. In verse 28, And the waters returned and covered the chariots and the horsemen and all the host of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. There remained not so much as one of them. But the children of Israel walked upon dry land in the midst of the sea, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right hand and unto their left. Thus the Eternal saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead upon the seashore. And Israel saw that great work which the Eternal did upon the Egyptians, and the people feared the Eternal and believed the Eternal and his servant Moses. The Israelites had to walk and leave God to do all the fighting, although in this instance the fighting was a little one-sided. God demonstrated his power in annihilating the Egyptians right in front of the Israelites, and he really wanted them to do was trust and obey. Not unreasonable, given that God had rescued them from their oppressors and then set them up with all the spoil of the Egyptians. But this was something that the Israelites struggled with to the point that they were barred entry into the Promised Land and had to spend 40 years wandering in the wilderness. During that time, they were being constantly taught to walk when God said walk and to stop when he said stop. The lesson was reiterated once again at the end of the Exodus when they crossed the Jordan into the Promised Land, as recorded in Joshua 3. Let me turn to Joshua 3 and we'll start reading from verse 13. And it shall come to pass, as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bore the ark of the Eternal, the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand up a heap. And it came to pass, when the people removed from the tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the ark of the covenant before the people, and as they that bore the ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bore the ark were dipped in the very brim of the water, for Jordan overfloweth all its banks at all the time of the harvest, that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up a heap, very far from the city Adam, that is beside Zaratan. And those that came down towards the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bore the ark of the covenant of the Eternal stood firm on dry ground in the midst of the Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan. Again, it's worth noting that Joshua didn't just make this up. In the preceding verses, God told Joshua exactly what to do and how to do it, and Joshua both trusted and obeyed. While there are many important lessons recorded in these events for us to learn today, what has this got to do with the offering that we will be taking up shortly? Well, first, let's have a look at some of the similarities to the position we find ourselves in at the moment. Before the Israelites were rescued from Egypt, they witnessed the plagues, experiencing the first few firsthand. But then the separation took place, the distinction between those God had chosen and the world around them. Throughout the plagues, they were being taught to trust God and also to obey him. The details for the Passover being quite specific, and obedience wasn't optional. The world around them, when they opened their doors in that morning, had changed completely to the world they had closed the door on the night before. All the firstborn of the Egyptians dead in one night, from the son of Pharaoh to the newest firstborn calf. It was the ultimate black swan of the day, the event that changed everything at the time. As the end of this age draws nearer, at a seemingly ever-increasing rate, we too are going to witness and experience several of these major types of events. The current pandemic, which has resulted in unprecedented actions being taken by the various governments of the world, actions which only a few months ago were things of fiction. When the current crisis ends, the world we will find ourselves in will be completely different to the one of only a few months ago. But the lessons for us go way beyond just the physical. We aren't walking through a physical wilderness being taught as you would a child to simply trust and obey. We've been called to walk the way. During our walk, our life, as we would call it, we too have to be taught to trust and obey. But we have to go way beyond that. We have to develop the mind of God, something the Israelites of old never could, as they were not given the Holy Spirit. Knowing that a road exists between where you are and where you want to be is not enough to get you to your destination. We have to walk and keep walking, no matter what happens around us. As Mr. Bowles brought out in the offertory that was played on the first holy day, we don't really own anything but rather it is God that owns everything. That which we have is merely on loan to us, to develop and ultimately to give back to God with increase, like the parable of the talent. God doesn't need our money, because he already owns it anyway. The new covenant that we are under sure is built on better promises, but God's law hasn't changed, and there is no getting away from the fact that the requirement to give an offering is not optional. It is a command. Turn now, if you would, to Deuteronomy 16. Now, before we read the actual command for the offering in verses 16 and 17, let's just take a moment to look at one verse pertaining to why we're here today, in verse 8. 6 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, and on the seventh day shall be a solemn assembly to the Eternal thy God. Thou shalt do no work therein. I think it gets the point across. Keeping these days are not optional. And then, having used the same language for the remaining feast days, we arrive at verse 16. 3 times in a year shall all your males appear before the Lord thy God in the place where he shall choose, in the Feast of Unleavened Bread, in the Feast of Weeks, and in the Feast of Tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord thy God, which he hath given thee. So giving an offering is very much a commandment, a part of the obligations of walking the way set before us. The amount we give is up to us, and the attitude we give it in is totally up to us, although we know that God loves a cheerful giver. But whether we give an offering or not, that is not negotiable. In verse 17, we are commanded to give as we are able, according to the blessings of God, and those blessings largely come when we trust and obey. So now, while the offering is taken up, we will have some special music, which is taken from Psalm 119, or Zane, Remember Your Word to Your Slave, which will be sung by Mrs. Paula Henderson and accompanied by Miss Beth.